Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It's always nice to have you, but it's really nice to have you today. We have a great panel. We have a lot to talk about, and we will do just that. We remind you that you can always join our conversation. Paddle@WAMC.org. Paddle@WAMC.org. A little snicker from Rosemary, but I understand. It's the 21st of August. It's Tuesday. Feels good. We're getting to the end of summer. Hard to believe. But
not only that, Joe, it's even worse than that. We only have today and tomorrow, the last 2 days of Rosemary before she goes back to her very dangerous assignment.
Oh, really? Do you see my pictures on Facebook? It seems many people think I don't work at all. I just eat and have fun.
Every time you're usually in a beautiful chair or sofa, drinking and eating.
Yeah, I try to do that as much as possible.
Either tea, and I don't want to say I don't mean drinking, but because a lot of times it's tea.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it isn't.
Sometimes it isn't. Yes.
Well, so
I like adult beverages.
We're going to make the most of your 2 days with us.
Okay, cool.
So we have a lot to do.
You have fabulous panelists. I've met so many great people. I've heard them for months now since I left, but now to actually meet them is very cool.
They're a good group. I just want to quickly note the music we had coming in was Chris Thomas King. He's performing in the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington tomorrow night. That's all part of the Guthrie Center's Troubadour series, which Sarah Lee told us about a couple weeks ago. You can learn more by going to theguthriecenter.org. Anybody see that movie, Oh Brother, We're Out There?
Yeah.
So the guitar playing Hitchhiker that George Clooney picks up, that's Chris Thomas King.
Yeah.
All right. Going to be performing tomorrow. And again, you can find out more at GuthrieCenter.org, and we'll be playing his music throughout the program this morning. And you can see the playlist online, WAMC.org/roundtable. Let me introduce the crew. Terry Gibson is here. He is a former New York State Senator. He is a current SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Terry, good morning. How are you?
And he's a dead ringer for Mitt Romney.
I'm not sure about that, but my students have asked me that before as well.
There's no question about it. And not only that, J.P. Miller, who's next to you, worked for Mitch Romney back in the day.
That's Mitt, what I heard. Right?
Mitt. Well, his friends call him Mitch.
No, well, just because we had that discussion before about the levels of people, and I just wanted to clarify, right?
The other guy was Mitch McConnell, who some people think is the third worst person in the world.
Some people do. So good morning, Terry. Nice to have you make the trek up the...
Thanks for having me.
...up the thruway. We always appreciate that. J.P. Miller is back with us. Were you here last week and I wasn't, or were you gone for 2 weeks?
I was here last week.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back. Good to see you again.
Good to
nice to have you.
Good to be here.
He runs that wonderful Empire Report.
Empire Report, it's the thing. If people want to, they just look at empirereport.com, right?
You Google Empire Report.
Google Empire Report. And then you can sign up and you can get it in your mailbox every morning, which is what you have to do.
If you really want it, you can.
No,
yes,
you have to.
What do you mean if you really want it?
People try and get off the list.
It's the first thing you do.
Now, do you watch those numbers? Those numbers go up and down as far as people who get it every day?
No.
Okay.
They go up every day.
Yeah, because I was thinking, because I look at all the stuff the night before, and then when I wake up in the morning, I get the Times Union, I get yours, and I get the New York Times, and the Times has the headlines, and I check and I see, you know, what happened overnight, and yours is always like the best of what.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's very good. And Rosemary Armeo, of course, is here, and
no static.
No. We have to talk about it. Before you leave, we need to have that discussion of how you can talk to you in your downtime in Jordan.
There has to be. I know. I don't understand why I have so much trouble.
Well, the other thing, too, is that because the first couple conversations we had with you were great. So
we've moved into new offices, and so there's a new phone system. But there was an echo. So my IT people are convinced, oh, my God, we're being bugged in the new offices. So that set off, the security alarms everywhere.
Which could be the case, right?
It could be. We don't know. Or it could just be bad phone lines, you know.
All right. So, Joe, not that we have to discuss all our business here, but there is the question of what would happen if WAMC, you know, using the people's monies, got Rosemary an international cell phone. Could we do that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think we should look into that. I think we should look into that.
That would work. Yeah, we have to talk to technical people.
We like having you on the show.
I like to. There's a lot of foreign stuff too, so you do get a different view when you're overseas. Yeah. People all talk about America, and it's...
so we'll put our Stacey Perry Rosenberry on that.
Okay,
case,
that would be
she'll
good.
Do it.
All right.
And sometimes you just are talking about topics that I'm screaming that I can't.
I know.
She's also trying to get a fifth microphone in this studio.
Yeah, the panels have grown since my day.
Takes a lot.
Back in the day, we had to shoulder all those topics by ourselves.
Takes a lot to replace Rosemary. And, of course, Alan Chartok, good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir, to you.
We are off and rolling here with stories of the day. If I find the list, by God, I'll start and look and get it all. There we go. So let's talk about Russian hacking. What would a day be without talking about Russian hacking? The new Russian hacking... there we go. The new Russian hacking targeted Republican groups, according to Microsoft. The Russian military intelligence unit that sought to influence the 2016 election appears to have a new target, conservative American think tanks that have broken with President Trump and are seeking continued sanctions against Moscow, exposing oligarchs or pressing for human rights. In a report scheduled for release today, Microsoft Corporation said that it detected and seized websites that were created in recent weeks by hackers linked to the Russian unit formerly known as the GRU. The sites appeared meant to trick people into thinking they were clicking through links managed by the Hudson Institute and the International Republican Institute, but were secretly redirected to web pages created by the hackers to steal passwords and other credentials.
This is wicked, you know. It really is wicked. I mean, people call me all the time and say, what'd you send me that email for? So somebody's every once in a while putting my name on an email and sending it to people. I hate that.
Are they Russians doing that?
Well, as you know, my heritage is Russian, so Shartuk, which means in Russian, little devil. And it does, yeah. Theo Bekel told me that, Shartuk. So, you know.
Well, it seems like there's still a lot that we don't know about exactly what the intention of these hacks were. But one of the things that disturbs me is the fact that one of these was the United States Senate website.
Yes.
So the idea that say, an average American wants to just go to the United States Senate website, which is a government website, and just learn about the state Senate, learn what's going on in government, and that some foreign entity could have control of that message, to me, is a very scary thing.
Sure.
It's also interesting, I think, that the Russian government seems to almost want to get caught with their hacking. They want U.S. citizens, they want people in Russia, they want people around the globe believing that Russia is really behind the scenes pulling the levers of power in the United States and abroad.
It's omnipotent.
Right. And where I think China and Iran and North Korea and some of these other places that obviously do hacking in the United States, they don't want to be on the front pages. They tend to not, if they do it, they're not getting caught as much as the Russians.
I think this is why I cannot understand how hacking and Russian meddling in the election is not a bipartisan issue. This is not good. What Putin is doing is targeting important institutions and bodies, and it's to just sow dissent, to sow confusion, to play down the media, to play down the importance of political parties, to make people fight with one another. Oh, it's all working. And all of this has happened. Putin is, he doesn't just, they don't care if they're found. They have been found out. And what's happened? Nothing in the United States. So what's the difference? Why should they operate in the shadows? Putin is the most powerful man in the world, and Mitt Romney was right about him. He continues to be a major threat.
Well, it is interesting because...
You looked at Terry when you said Mitt Romney.
Well, because yes. Mitt, you're right.
So for those of us who think there is some real substance to this relationship between the president, President Trump, and Putin, this just gives more credibility to the whole thing as far as I'm concerned, because the president, pardon me, I choked over that word, the president.
Yeah, I know.
refuses to acknowledge what all of his major advisors and the security people are saying, and he keeps coming back, if the Russians. Come on now, you know, this guy is caught in a two-way pincer between, you know, the people who are investigating it and the Russians, who clearly have something that he's worried about them disclosing.
The idea that China, Iran, and North Korea are also hacking, that's something John Bolton has said. So it could be anybody, including the 400 guy, naked guy on the bed that's doing the hacking. But Microsoft, and they're in the business of knowing about hacking, have only found Russians interfering with the election, including the midterms.
Yeah.
So it's frightening.
And one kind of warfare, if we had a regular war, I should say a regular war, in the United States, it would really unite us. And this war, which is a cyber war with Russia, is dividing us.
Right.
And how do we now, how do we reciprocate to Russia? How do we battle them on this front? It's such a challenging issue for us as to how we punish them and make sure that they don't do this when anybody can get a computer and hack.
Exactly. We have an administration that, far from punishing them, still wants to make friends with or is even treasonously close to Putin. You have even members on the left are pacifists. I kept talking about the peace conference I went to, believe that we should be friends with Russia and speak with them, and why the artificial divide we have should not be exacerbated. But I think Putin is an enemy. And I don't know. I think part of his success is that there's so much division that we are not combining together, joining together to combat it.
You know, Rosemary, that view is shared not only by the Democrats in Congress right now, but by most of the Republicans. And so that's what makes them particularly feckless, because, you know, they know it, they say it, they may on occasion vote that way. But for the most part, they won't do anything to get in the president's face. And that is disgusting and really dishonest.
You know, not to make Mitt Romney a continuing theme this morning, but it is related to the story, because in the story, one of the institutes that has been hacked, the board of directors consists of Mitt Romney is one of those, is on that board.
Target.
John McCain is on that board. H.R. McMaster is on that board. And these are all, with the exception, I guess, of H.R. McMaster, people that have been very outspoken against Trump in recent
years. Well, then on the Hudson
That's his incident. Pattern. That's his pattern. He goes after the people who have criticized him, starting with Hillary Clinton. But the Broder, he's gone after him. The McCall, the former ambassador. If you have criticized him, he makes you a target.
And if they're from Russia, he throws you out of a hotel room window.
Exactly. Yeah, there are a lot of strange deaths.
Or maybe something else happens to you.
He's not a good guy. Even though he gave our president a soccer ball.
Which was probably, you know.
Which he gave directly to his wife.
Yes.
Who's running an anti-bullying campaign.
That's so effective, too. I'm so amazed at the power of that.
Yeah.
Went away. Yeah. So when it comes to this story, I'm struck by what you said at the very beginning, Rosemary, of the fact that you would think that this would bring about bipartisanship. It is not. So then what happens? Because we're not even taking this as a serious. Will we now take this more serious? It doesn't seem like we're going to. As a government, I mean.
Someone else should answer that, because I'm filled with hope and gloom at the whole issue. I if you remember when the DNC leaks began, they began coming out, and the two line of thoughts were, oh my God, the Russians did this. That's with many Democrats, and then people who don't like Hillary in both parties said, yeah, but it's the content that matters. No, both things matter. The content, yes, that's okay. Yeah, we were mean to Bernie. Okay, not a real Democrat. That's another fight. But how did they get the information? That is a story, and that is something that we should all be concerned about, continue to be concerned about. And this story today shows that.
Yeah, and the content in those emails that came out during the election, the content wasn't so exciting in the media, but what was crazy is you talked to people that worked on that campaign and the Hillary campaign. It was warfare. While they should be spending the last 90 days of the campaign focusing 100% of their energy and time and ability on talking about Hillary's message and exposing Trump's message. They're instead the top people in that yep. campaign are worried about what's the next email dump going to be, it was certainly warfare on the campaign.
And they were also incredulous that there was not an outcry against the Russian hacking. They yeah. had expected that. They expected something from Congress, from the president. I think Obama's definitely to blame for this as well. And from the opponents, and in a normal election, Trump might have said, look, I don't like Hillary. I want to beat her and crush her, but I don't want the Russians going after that. None of that happened. We were divided, and the Russians have exacerbated that, but it was there.
And the media ate it up and did the Russians bidding by yep. focusing on that during the last many weeks of the campaign.
Yep.
Terry?
I think you just also want to keep in mind that this also relates to the members of Congress that have shown time and time again that they don't really understand how the internet works. When they interviewed Mark Zuckerberg,
we
saw that they really don't understand the power of social media, the power of the internet. So to expect that they're going to take this seriously, I think, is questionable. It's one of the reasons why we need to get more young people elected to Congress that really understand the importance of communicating in the 21st century with 21st century tools.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Terry Gibson, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. Plus your letters. We'll go to those. We'll get to those when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Terry Gibson join us this morning. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org, and Alan has a few to read to you right now.
All right, here are a couple. Russian hacking. Rosemary, Russian hacking is not a bipartisan issue for the same reason that voter suppression is not. It helps Republicans. The GOP has made it obvious that they do not value the democratic process. They have lost their war of ideas with most Americans, so they must resort to cheating to stay in power. If Russian hacking helped elect Hillary, they would be screaming from the rafters. And that's from our friend Marty, who writes fairly regularly and almost always correctly. Go ahead, Rosemary. You got anything to say?
No. I mean, I think today's story shows that the Russians were also looking at Republican sites. So while they have so far benefited Republicans by attacking Democrats, that could easily change. We're all Americans. We ought to be concerned about this. So that's all.
Well, but what about his essential point here? And I think he's right that the Republicans have resorted to, cheating, which means putting people on the court who will do Citizens United or make sure that people who want to vote, you have to have driver's licenses and things like that.
I think the Republicans have always been or have long been better than Democrats at playing by the rules of the game. And what we've learned is that the rules of the game are not protecting fairness and fair play. So everything that Trump does, he's so far not been proved to be doing anything illegal because he has the nerve, the courage, his friends would say, to go right up against what's written down as law or honor or tradition.
But speaking for Martin, who writes to us regularly and who's not with us right now, when you say that, they may be. The real question is, what is their objective? And their objective in this case is, for example, not allowing people who should be allowed to vote to vote. That's disgusting, although it may be legal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Martin. And then Michael on Cape Cod. It is common knowledge that Trump's real lawyer is Emmett Flood. Somebody remind me?
Yeah, he was a lawyer hired, just recently after the guy with the handlebar mustache.
Oh, yeah, Ty Cobb.
And he's worked on other impeachments.
Okay, so why does the media cover Rudy Giuliani so much? He has been hired to distract the media by saying ridiculous things on television. As anyone can see, he's not functioning as the president's lawyer in any real way. I would take deep disagreement with that. First of all, I think they've got an inside lawyer and an outside lawyer. And I think, you know, Giuliani is the outside lawyer, but I think he is following the absolute instructions of Trump. Just take this business about there is no such thing as truth. He makes a fool out of himself with that. The next day, Trump comes and says exactly the same thing about why he's not going to fall into a perjury trap because he'll say this and I'll say that. And, you know, and the special counsel, who, of course, he says is best friends with, you know, all of the FBI guys. Yeah.
I heard an interesting theory yesterday that Giuliani's one of his roles, aside from getting all the attention off of Flood, who probably is doing things that are more legally acceptable, is to kind of pollute the jury pool. And he and other Trump operatives have been really effective at that. There's a big body of people out there who believe that it's a what are the words again? Rigged witch hunt?
So let's see what the
Manafort. Giuliani does that.
So let's see what the Manafort jury says, for example. Because as we've been saying on this program a lot, it only takes one.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the real lawyers in this particular situation are not being given access to the press, probably smartly so. And the not-so-real lawyers, Giuliani being at the top of that list, is being given all the access that he can possibly be given. And I think Alan's right. It's for the strict purpose of distraction and to try to make some attempt to control the message or to at least confuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe on something like Meet the Press, when Rudy Giuliani came out, I believe that the administration basically tells Meet the Press, this is who you're going to get from the administration on the show. You know, it's coordinated that way. And while Rudy is very gaffe-prone and not as good of a communicator as he was, say, 20 years ago, you can make the case that he is an effective communicator for the president. Now, he says crazy things all the time, which isn't great, but that's kind of some might say that takes a little heat off the crazy things that Trump says.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so here's another one. It is, we did that one, so sorry. And then shot until proven guilty, says Jonathan in Gardner. I'm a great fan of the show, live or later on the podcast. So remember, everybody, you can always go to WMC.org and hear the show anytime you want. I know Rosemary does that when she's abroad.
I do.
I'm a great fan of the show, live or later on the podcast. This morning's news from Albany on AMC mentions a suspect in the alleged fight this morning was pursued by police on foot and shot while running from the police. We hear this all the time. How can this be anything but attempted murder by police? Are police authorized to use deadly force when they're not under deadly threat? Running from the police is not a crime, is it? Is running from the police a deadly threat to a police officer, punishable by death at the officer's discretion? Cheers, JP from Gardner.
Anybody? Shaking heads. Okay.
Agreed.
Well, you know, it is a very interesting concept as to whether or not police in their discretion can shoot somebody, often in the back, while fleeing. Now, if they offered bodily harm, allegedly, then the police theoretically, I suppose, have some rationale for doing it, but it is absolutely true that there's far too much of it, and there's far too many times when these things happen under the strangest of circumstances, and grand juries don't like to pursue that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, I have a grandson of color now, and I'm very happy, and I love him. But there is always this question of what happens when this kid grows up and, you know, some officer stops him for driving while black or walking while black or whatever. And that is very, very problematic. You know, Rosemary says, James, phones, have you looked into a Volpe? There are many out there. I personally use one called
The rodent?
V-O-L, V-O-L capital P, one word.
No, I have not.
There are many out there. I personally use one called Discord, free with password-protected channels. I use one playing online games with people across the states, but also the world, Europe, Australia, India, Japan, Russia, with Clarity. if you have internet, this is a possibility. Oh, I see, voiceover something, right?
It'd be like a Skype program, yeah. I think.
If you have, you know, I've been listening to Skype, but when NPR can't get anybody and they use Skype, it's awful.
Yeah. We can't do Skype. No. We tried that.
Yeah, what'd you say?
No.
You disagree?
I'm interested in why NPR insists on saying Skype when they don't say, if they have a telephone conversation, they don't say this is through AT&T, or they don't say this is through Verizon. Why would they say Skype?
But you know, Joe, the NPR is not alone in that. I hear it all the time on, other purveyors of sound. And so maybe there's some kind of a deal that they make with them.
I'm wondering.
Yeah. Okay, so that was from James, and that's all I've got for now.
All right, well, thank God I've got more topics, so let's go. Don McGahn, let's talk about him. We mentioned this yesterday, but McGahn does not believe he implicated Trump in legal wrongdoing in special counsel interviews, according to his attorney. His attorney talked to the president's legal team, and that's what they've come up with. White House counsel Don McGahn says, no, he didn't. He didn't do anything. He didn't say anything bad about the president. The assurances from McGahn's attorney came as the president and his lawyers pushed back against the suggestion in a New York Times report that Trump's attorneys have little insight into what McGahn told special counsel Robert Mueller. Mueller, of course, investigating Russian interference in the 2016 campaign and whether Trump has sought to obstruct that probe. McGahn's attorney, Bill Burke, told Trump's lawyers this past weekend that McGahn did not assert that Trump engaged in any wrongdoing when he spoke to Mueller's investigators in three lengthy interviews since last November, according to people with knowledge of the discussions. He did not incriminate him, Bruck wrote in one email, which was described by multiple people. McGahn referred questions to Burke, who declined at comment. And I think a lot of this came out just because of the timing, right? The length of the interviews, which was in some cases
10 hours.
Well, I believe, yes, overall 30 hours of questioning.
I don't think you can talk about Donald Trump for 30 hours without saying something bad. I don't think his wife or most of his children even could do that.
Nobody.
Rosemary, isn't it also a possibility that he has deniability here because he's given 10 hours of who went into that room for that interview and how many people were there and in the hotel and how many people. So without saying anything that you would find incriminating, it might certainly 10 hours worth lead to other things
are you saying you could implicate him without thinking you're implicating him?
Well, maybe and maybe not. In other words, you might be able to say safely, I didn't say anything bad about the guy, but I did say how many people walked into that room and who
right.
was there, what
yeah.
they did, yeah. and then it would be defensible, don't you think?
Well, and a trained top-level attorney mm-hmm. that is speaking under oath to other attorneys, your first priority is telling the truth and not perjuring mm-hmm. yourself.
Sure.
Your first priority is not helping this guy Donald Trump if you're Don McGahn. And Trump knows that. And Trump knows that even the people that are closest around him, he can't trust them because they don't trust him. And to find out that McGahn was talking for 30 hours has Trump extremely nervous. And he's also, I think, embarrassed the fact that he didn't know that, right? This is not a guy that's focused on the details of life, President Trump. And the fact that he didn't know that McGahn was in there for 30 hours, I think, was very troubling for
him. You know what I find real interesting about this is that you keep reading in various sources that McGahn doesn't have personal contact with the president, which is fascinating. He has to go through the chief of staff.
That's the way most White Houses are set up. It should be only the chief of staff that controls.
Well, yes, you're right. But the counsel to the White House counsel, and that's what he is, by the way. White House counsel as opposed to
Trump
counsel.
Yeah. Right.
There was an interview somewhere yesterday, with John Dean.
Former rat.
Right, to Nixon, and there was some comparisons made to this actual story here, and. One of the theories, I think maybe you talked about this yesterday, was that McGahn is afraid that he's going to be thrown under the bus and be blamed for all of this. And so he's coming forward and just saying, this is what I know.
We've gotten a ton of mail on this rat thing. Ton of mail. In which people are suggesting that the word rat is inappropriate for a guy who may have saved the United States. Because Dean did this wonderful thing. He came forward and he talked about what had happened, and I know Rosemary's not going to agree with this, but I don't think you can use the word the president of the United States ought to be describing somebody as a rat who, you know, told the truth.
I'm more disturbed at calling Omarosa a dog than calling McCain.
Why aren't both bad, Rosemary?
Why aren't both John bad? Dean a rat. Yeah. Well, he's got horrible. You know. Well, he speaks his mind, Alan. You know, that's why he got elected.
Yes, indeed.
No PC, tells it like it is. Yeah. Right.
Well, also these news stories that are talking about this McGahn issue is they're also saying that McGahn, yes, at one time had a direct relationship with the president, and now has to go through the chief of staff, and also that he is now working on getting the Kavanaugh nomination through the Senate. And the word is, and now the word in the press is not always correct, but the word is that he may resign after Kavanaugh gets confirmed.
Well, let's talk about Kavanaugh. We have a lot to discuss on that front. We'll take a break, and we'll welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Terry Gibson. We'll be right back.
The crystal fountains, so come with me. We go and see the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains.
Good morning. Welcome back again. That's Chris Thomas King that we're listening to performing at the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington on Wednesday. That's better known as tomorrow night. It's all part of the Troubadour series at the Guthrie Center. GuthrieCenter.org for more information, and you can find out information on the music that we've been playing by going to WAMC.org/roundtable. Okay, Alan has some letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
Very quickly, not a lot of them, but here's one which I find appropriate with Rosemary sitting next to me. Title is Hello from Fire Island. It's a beautiful beach day, Dr. Chartok. How come when I am here, you are not? I listen to WMC every day and from everywhere. As always, I appreciate Rosemary's insistence on calling it like it is. When will the roundtable come to the lower Hudson Valley next? And that's Pete from Poughkeepsie. And Joe, can we go down there?
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to go down there, find a place, because, you know, people in the Hudson Valley love us, and we want to make sure that we show the reciprocal love.
I think we should do a show from Fire Island.
Yeah. Yeah,
because we don't mention it enough.
Yeah. It doesn't get enough press.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And then Michael from Albany says, news reports that the Russians have hacked,
which reminds me, just a little reminder, just proofread your emails before you send them.
The Russians have hacked. How you pronounce hacked in Russian. Conservative Republicans who, quote, oppose Trump. If true, it's a target hack, not in an effort to hack Republican congressional sites in general. And that's Michael from Albany. Yeah, thank you for that, Michael.
I just wanted to add into this story about the hacking. We should keep in mind that this probably, based on all the reporting we're seeing, is just a really small microcosm of what's actually going on, that the number of hacks that are actually happening like this are probably uncountable at the moment. They've just caught a small amount of them.
And I think Microsoft has been fairly honest about that said, we got these, right. But there could be others.
The article describes it as playing whack-a-mole, basically.
Right.
Whack-a-mole. Yeah. Wild whack-a-mole. Right. And then we heard from Greg, who says, potpourri of foreign affairs questions for Rosemary. What do you think of new Saudi king Mohammed bin Salman? Are the Iranian and Turkish currency and inflation issues serious enough to topple Khomeini or Erdogan? And how do you and your peers view Jordan's view, the U.S. role in Jordan? Oh, how do you and your peers in Jordan view the U.S. role in Yemen? And that's Greg. Oh, and it says, nobody has filled the giant void in international affairs and geopolitics commentary that Rosemary left.
Oh, that's very nice. I don't think it's true, but Jordan is tremendously anti-Iranian, and so it favors U.S. policies that are all aimed at being anti-Iranian. And that has meant just horrible. I can't believe we're involved in Yemen. That's just such an awful and dirty war. We should have nothing to do with it. And it also has to do with our Yemen is also involved with our partnership with Saudi Arabia. I think the new king there, which the New York Times has embraced him like he's a god. He's awful. He's jailed women, feminist leaders. His enemies, an alleged crackdown on corruption. He basically held up a bunch of rich guys and said, you know, turn over your corruption proceeds to me. I think he's really dangerous, and not least because he has wide support from the United States. Did I answer everything?
So far, so good. Joe, back to you.
All right. Wasn't there another question?
Erdogan. Erdogan is a dictator. He has unbelievable powers of the sort that Trump is aiming for. And so many of the currency issues there have to do with that. He has full control, and you can't really control the monetary issues that he has.
But what's happening?
The U.S. now, because they're saying let our pastor go or else, we're going to hurt you, has really... He's hurting the economy. Trump is very much hurting the economy of Turkey. I just have a hard time feeling sorry for Erdogan. So.
Me too.
It was supposed to be a White House salute to the heroism of immigration agents who put their lives on the line to protect Americans. But on Monday, President Trump appeared to have something else on his mind, the ethnicity of one of the men he was honoring. Speaks perfect English, Mr. Trump blurted out as he encouraged Adrian Azaldúa, a Hispanic American Border Patrol agent and dog handler from Texas, to join him on stage in the East Room. Mr. Anzaldúa recently arrested a smuggler in Laredo who had tried to bring 78 people into the U.S. illegally inside a truck trailer. Come here, I want to talk to you about that. 78 lives, Mr. Trump said, putting him on the spot. You saved 78 people, so how did you feel that there were people in that trailer? If the man was offended, he did not show it. He smiled, he strode to the lectern, then offered a brief account of how he received an alert about the truck, ran the dog to search it, and then opened the latch to reveal a lot of subjects.
Okay, so here is a situation in which the Hispanic population in the United States, I think it's fair to say, is largely opposed to Trump. For a lot of reasons, you know, rapists coming across the border and all of those things. And so Trump, in an effort to sort of, you know, his people, in order to get a little something going, pulls somebody out of the crowd and says, come and join us on the stage here. You're one of the good ones. And tries to make that case. But in doing so, looks pandering and pathetic. So I don't think it works.
Well, he also, was a real, I hate to use the word honest with this president, but I do think it was an honest moment in that the way he said, and he speaks perfect English, I don't think that was a slip. I think that was just honest Trump. That's what went through his brain at the moment. That's the way he thinks. About
how does a guy that color speak that English well?
I mean, this was set up, obviously. This was arranged, obviously, right? They knew they were going to bring this guy up. It was planned out ahead of time. This wasn't spontaneous. It was supposed to look spontaneous, but it wasn't. So imagine how this Border Patrol agent felt who knew he was going to be called up, probably was already thinking about what am I going to say, how am I going to deal with this, and to have to follow a line that essentially discriminates against him being an American.
Or the use was on, as the old saying goes.
Yeah.
He's a racist. He is clumsy and awkward around people of color and women. And it shows every time he speaks. And America loves him for that. 41% does. And people who voted for him and say it's for economic reasons put that ahead of putting an awful man in our office, in our highest office.
But regardless of how you feel about the Border Patrol or ICE or immigration, this is a law enforcement officer who is paid by the taxpayers of this country, who is there to enforce the laws of this country. And the president of the United States makes a derogatory remark against this individual who is an American.
He is an American. That's
accusing him of possibly not being able to speak fluent English. It's just remarkable. And the racist tones that are.
By the way, and when you
that.
Think perfect English, you think Donald Trump.
I think Melania. Yeah.
I do.
It was reminded me of when you're maybe a family gathering and there's an older aunt or uncle or grandparent, not to
Irving,
discriminate against
uncle
older
Irving.
People, but who would say something like that as thinking it's a compliment, and really it's not. And I agree with Terry that this was unintentional, but where some of his comments are intentionally provocative, this was unintentional. This was just him, and it showed him.
Well, and then once again, you know, remember when Biden said of Barack Obama, oh, he's a great guy, I really love him, he's well-spoken, and that's like code, oh, how could a black person be well-spoken? Yeah. And he took such a beating for that. Even Barack, I guess, had to forgive him.
I want to read...
He gets celebrated. Yeah. Trump gets celebrated for this kind of thing.
I'm sorry, Rosie.
Sorry, that's okay.
No, my fault.
I'm done.
I do want to read a letter from John who says, Albany shooting, I think we have to delay judgment of law enforcement in situations like these. In my opinion, law enforcement officers are responsible for the prevention as well as investigation of crime. An individual fleeing the scene of a crime with a weapon seems to be a potential threat to the community and should be dealt with accordingly, and that's John in Saratoga.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We'll talk about Brett Kavanaugh and other issues. Ray Graff has news. We'll be right back.
I tried to be true.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's the 21st of August. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Terry Gibson. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
the hearings are going to start next month into the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh, who is the Supreme Court nominee. A 1998 memo written by Brett Kavanaugh proposed a series of tough, sexually explicit questions for President Bill Clinton to answer about his affair with Monica Lewinsky, shedding new light on the Supreme Court nominee's moralistic outlook and his view of presidential power. Kavanaugh, an associate counsel in the Office of Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr, wrote in the memo that he was strongly opposed to giving Clinton any break and suggested 10 questions, including...
You can't read any of them.
I don't think I can read any of them. If Ms. Lewinsky says that you inserted a cigar, ... while you were in the Oval Office area, would she be lying? The memo provides a...
No, you can smoke in the White House.
The memo provides a contrast to the genial, soft-spoken nominee who chooses every word carefully as he makes the rounds of the Senate before his September 4th hearing before the Judiciary Committee.
So look, they're going to force this guy through. We all know it. Not only that, they have the votes. It doesn't matter what people find. We have a letter right here that just came in. What exactly is going on with Kavanaugh's records? I've read and heard conflicting reasons for why they're being withheld from the Democrats in Congress and the public. Any insight into this? Yeah, they don't want people to read them. And here is this guy who was basically played the role of the heavy or the thug. Come on now. When it came to the Clinton impeachment. And, you know, he's on record as saying, oh, I don't think you should bother sitting presidents. But he was the agent of Clinton's destruction. And so it wasn't very nice. And so you got all this stuff that's adding up now. But, you know, take a look at Susan Collins and one or two of the others. They're not going to vote against that candidate. They're going to put him right through. And not only that, they're spending a fortune. I've never seen anything like it. On the television now, we have the wife coming on and saying, what a wonderful man my husband is and how great and kind he is. And string music and children and, doing all that. The guy is going to get through.
I think this story was planted by the Republicans. I think this story was promoted and pushed to reporters by Republicans because I think it is extremely helpful to Republicans and extremely damaging to Democrats.
That people are being opposing the nomination.
I just think the fact that Monica Lewinsky is mentioned in this article like repetitively,
yes,
that it rehashes the entire Clinton impeachment, I think is incredibly helpful to helping them get this nominee through the process because— What are Democrats going to do? Start talking about Bill Clinton's impeachment again? Start asking about the things that he asked about Monica Lewinsky? No, I mean, I think this really helps push this person through even more.
Even though he's a hypocrite? I was going to use an adjective.
I don't think the people that want this individual to be on the Supreme Court care about that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
He ends his memo by saying, more to the point, aren't we failing to fulfill our duty to the American people if we willingly conspire with the president in an effort to conceal the true nature of his acts?
Well, when I read those questions that he wanted to ask Clinton, it to me made him look like not so much a nominee for a Supreme Court justice. Nominees for Supreme Court justices are supposed to have a certain amount of gravitas,
yeah,
and certainly not be biased. And those questions to me seem like the questions that a political operative would ask, not a judge.
To me, they seem like the questions of a Pence, born again, moralistic Jeff Sessions kind of, how dare he do this? And that's what we're getting on the Supreme Court. But we already knew that. We have others like that. He's going to be another Clarence on the Clarence Thomas court. And that is exactly what they want. I do think that's an interesting theory.
It's what the base wants.
Pro-Republican.
It's what the base demands.
Yep.
The fact that this guy is on record of asking these questions about a president and going down into what many of us consider to be a very unacceptable, filthy place, is exactly what they want.
Exactly. And it has nothing to do, I think, in their minds with will he treat Trump in the same way to ask hard questions, which it should be. That's the hypocritical aspect. I don't think they care about that at all. But the other thing about this nomination are the records. Why can the Democrats not get the records? Why not wait until the National Archives has them all, which would be in late September or October? Why push it forward now? And that's interesting. Chuck Grassley was on the news yesterday saying, well, look, they're asking for more records than we've ever had on any other candidate. I'm not sure what that has to do with it. He is a judge and a lawyer with many, many publications and writings out there. So why would you not ask for all of them just because other ones had less? That makes no sense.
So it's clear they were cherry picking.
And yeah, I think so.
They wanted to.
And he says that, there's 25% of them available now to the committee. It's not available to the public, but it's available to the committee. And he goes, and we'll get these out to you right away.
But do you think it makes a difference even if you had them?
No. I think Alan is completely right. This is a done deal.
Yeah, well, the Republicans have the power here to message this however they want, to withhold whatever they want, to play this however they want. And the Democrats have no choice but to try to fight and get it any way that they can and say what they want. So, but it's a losing battle, I'm afraid, even though it is a battle we have to fight.
All right. Let's move on to we were going to talk about the story yesterday and I didn't get to it, but I want to talk about it today. And that is John Brennan. And on August 15th, President Trump revoked former CIA Director John Brennan's security clearance. Brennan led the CIA during most of President Barack Obama's second term and had become a vocal Trump critic. And now we have all of these intelligence officials speaking out about this, about the removal of the president of the clearance and rebukes to the president's move. And so who do we have here? We have Clapper, Tennant, Panetta, Haynes, Petraeus, Gross, Gates, Webster, Hayden, McLaughlin, Cohen, Callan, Blair, Morrell. Does this make a difference to have these people speak out?
No. These people spoke out even before the election. Remember the massive letters of protest and warning from all of these are the establishment people that Trump has said he has no respect for. They didn't do it right. He's going to do it all different. I think it helps them.
I think it's helpful to have these individuals who have a strong record serving in government and serving the country to be on record stating these things. I think they do give some validity that's important to this argument that what the president is doing is possibly illegal and is threatening the security of our country. I think it's important that they do this. Whether or not it moves the needle is really going to be up to the voters. It's really up to the citizens of this country who ultimately have the final say-so into who runs this country. But I think it's important they're coming forward. I find what's really interesting about this article, I like how they put the pictures up of all these individuals. I wish they'd have done it all the way through, because what you do see from the pictures they put up is something that it does remind us that the majority of the power in our government continues to go to white males. There are very few women. There are very few people of color. There are some exceptions. but not nearly enough. And I think that's just an interesting optic that we still are dealing with.
I watched Brennan on Meet the Press this weekend, and I think when you add Brennan and Stroke and Comey, and you put together Trump's narrative that members of the intelligence community are working against me, I think when you put those three people together, I think it does help Trump. I think that those three specifically high-level ranking members of the intelligence committee look like partisans. They talk like partisans. Whether or not they were partisans historically, they look like them now, and it helps Trump's narrative. He likes John Brennan attacking him like this. He thinks it helps him, and I think it does help him.
Absolutely.
So what do you don't you think that the theory is that instead of revoking all of the clearances at one time, that you just do it as
whenever you need a distraction?
Yes, whenever you need a distraction.
Well, there is one value. There is some value in Brennan actually taking to court if he does, which is that he would object to the process. And again, it's happened so rarely that there is not a process. Trump has lots of power. The president has lots of power. But that's not the same as saying you don't go about it in a specific way. And if it goes into court, you're going to get more clarity on that than we have now. I'm all in favor of codifying everything. We'll leave nothing to tradition anymore after the Trump presidency. So there could be value in that.
Well, I think I want to take a different tack here. I think there are times for people to stand up, to be profiles in courage. And when I think the history books are written about this whole thing, we're going to find Brennan to be a hero. Because if you believe, as I do, that this president is trying to lead us into a fascist totalitarian state, then, you know, you need every voice being raised. And you look back in history and you say, well, you know, and Rosemary, you cover all of these dictators and these near dictators and everybody else. And you say, okay, well, who was there to stand up? And there were precious few. And the few that had the courage to do it got eliminated. They got put in jail. Putin's killing them. Those are the reasons why you need a Brennan at a time like this. I hear you. You may be right politically that a Brennan may actually help the guy because of what he's doing. And yet, you know, I think I got to say I'm a tremendous admirer of his.
Well, right now, I don't think that there are precious few standing up against him. I think there are a lot of people standing up against the president and the entire media complex standing up against the president.
You sound like him.
And the 100% focus of the media on him helps him. Mm-hmm. And the media is forced to do that because they want to make money and get ratings. But in my opinion, if you really wanted to defeat Trump, you would take a little bit of the focus on him, talk about other news stories that would drive him nuts.
You might talk about Cuomo, for example.
Drive him nuts, yeah.
And a tremendous story in the New York Times this morning about how he really had a great deal to do with by our friend Jesse McKinley. How he had a great deal to do with much more than people thought with Prococo and the other miscreants who were floating around out there. So, it's true. That story is ignored, JP. Even though you do your best to put it up there on the Empire Report, it's ignored because Trump has sucked all the oxygen out of the room. But when you're facing the potential for a guy who really wants to turn this country into a totalitarian regime, the press's obsession with him makes a certain amount of sense.
Well, his point about JP's point about taking the focus off of Trump and focusing more on other things, I think if the press would focus more on local races, governor's races, congressional races across the state, that would be extremely helpful, because the way to beat Trump is to elect more people at the local level that can begin to build a party with some power to actually defeat him in 2020. But as long as we're focused on Trump, that's difficult to do.
Well, you know what? You sound like a journalism professor, which is the difference between should be, should, and would, you know what I mean?
Correct the record.
I'm not a journalism professor.
Should and schmud. The fact is we know that what you say is true. On the other hand, these guys all have jobs, and they know that if they started to talk about even Andrew Cuomo and what he's doing, or the local stuff, you know, that happened in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. You'd have a collective yawn that would blast you across the ocean.
Yes, but the result is we get a very uninformed citizenry that doesn't have the information they need to make decisions about voting or to even be inspired to vote.
Or to be on a jury.
Or to be on anything. And the state of our government reflects the lack of local journalism. I think it does because people are uninformed.
Again, I can't disagree with that, except the blame totally on the media is just wrong.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry. You have a duty totally, as a citizen. No. There is information out there on all these local races, on the governor, on everything that you're interested in. There is information out there. I don't get this idea that every single news media has to write every single story, put all the context and all the examples, and run it high enough on page one or in their broadcast that you will pay attention
and
to it.
Yet,
that is not my job as a journalist.
Well, and yet, you know, here I live in Massachusetts, a wonderful state. We have a primary for attorney general that's going on right now. And I would bet the ranch that if you stood in front of the Great Barrington Post Office on Main Street and asked the first 100 people who passed who the opponent to Maura Healey is, you would find out that nobody knew nothing. And that's why your point is extremely well taken.
Well, I mean, Jay Leno and every night show host since then has done that, and they've gone on. And it isn't just local issues. They don't know who the vice president of the United States is.
Right.
They can't name two justices on the Supreme Court.
That's
and
right.
we cover. Have you ever gone to a jury when they're doing voir dire and you can't have a informed jury? This is not a problem. They are not informed.
Well, this case about the Manafort.
Well,
yeah.
You know who they know, though? They know Omarosa.
Because it's entertainment. Right. That's not the media's fault. That's because you can...
Well, who's putting it out? The media are looking for profit, right? That's what the media is there for, is for profit. It's not to educate people. It's for profit.
They would say they're there for both.
No. They're there for profit. And they are there to make money. And the only way that the best way they can do it is to talk about Trump and Omarosa and Russia.
No, actually, I read everything. I could tell you everything about Kim Kardashian. I do not hate celebrity news. But I also can tell you about politics in Saudi Arabia and about the budget of the United States. It is not impossible when you have an educated population. So if we're going to bash the press, let's also bash the schools, which raise people not to understand what's in the media or how to use it.
I absolutely agree. And I was going to say that, no, I would not put all the pressure on the media. I would definitely put a lot of pressure and a lot of blame on the education system because you, if you don't know that there are things to know, then you're
don't
not motivated
go
to
it.
Go
so,
look for
so
it.
When yes, my, again, I've said it too many
seconds,
times.
30 seconds, go ahead.
When my wife came up with a Holocaust unit, the first in America, full-time at a high school, she got a deputation of German-Americans who came in to say, you know, this is unfair. And a big meeting and everything that happened. I mean, educators have certain limitations put on them by school committees and others, which really are in many ways responsible for what we're getting.
It's not teachers I object to. It's the educational system that puts those rigid rules and testing into place.
We are out of time. My thanks to our wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, who's already out the door. J.P. Miller and Terry Gibson, thank you all, and we'll be back right after this.